professional athletes, they spend a bulk majority of their time training, practicing, learning new techniques. And then once a week, they have game day where they actually apply those things. While we as software professionals, we apply things 24/7, you know, 7 days a week, but we don't take the time to actually learn new things.
Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast from AzureMonk.com. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a senior cloud solution architect for Microsoft at New York City. For more podcast episodes, super simplified lessons and content on Azure, check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. In this episode, we talk to Mithun Shanbhag, who is the CEO and founder of Skewed Ventures, which created CloudSkew.com, which you might all be familiar with, is an online diagram and flowchart editor specifically designed for cloud architecture design diagrams. I talk with Mithun on his journey in the cloud technology space, his entrepreneurial venture, his daily routine, his boot up sequence, his favorite books, the importance of sharpening the saw, and more good stuff. There's also a link in the description for the walkthrough of the architecture of Cloud's Cube web application, which is hosted on Azure. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Mithun. Good morning, good evening. Anand. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Anand. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to connecting with you and your audience here.
Great to have you on the show. So, Mithun, I mean, I've used... you know, Cloud's Queue, and I'm a big fan of it. I use it for almost all my architecture design diagrams. But I wanted to, you know, give you an opportunity to talk about your journey in like the tech world and sort of how you got to where you are, right? And also, what is Cloud's Queue, okay, and what problem it's trying to solve?
Sure, sure. So I saw like there are three or four questions in there. My tech journey, oh boy, this is going to be a long, long one. I have gray hair right now. So, I've been what I call a journeyman techie. So I've been all over the tech landscape, if you will. I started out as an electronics engineer, moved on to computer architecture, then a little bit of stuff with operating systems, then languages and runtimes, then a little bit stuff with the Visual Studio code editor, then Azure Cloud, and then coding boot camps, consulting, and now CloudSkew. So it's been like sort of all over the place. There has never been any sort of strategic career planning on my end. Mm-hmm. I just tend to do whatever makes me happy and whatever people find useful. I think the bulk majority of my professional career was spent at Microsoft. So I worked in four odd teams there over 12 years. Starting from Windows Server to Common Language Runtime, then a little bit on the Visual Studio team, and finally on Azure Cloud. After that, sort of decided to branch out on my own. So started out with a coding bootcamp for any for all of the JavaScript technologies. So we were doing coding bootcamps for anything from Node.js, Angular, React, anything to do with JavaScript and web development. So after that, that sort of branched into consulting, and that's still where I spend bulk of my efforts today. So mostly consulting for .NET, Azure, and Angular related projects. And CloudSkew is something that actually grew out of that consulting effort. So I was spending a lot of time with my customers, actually trying to, create architecture proposals, most of my customers are trying to do cloud lift and shift to the cloud, or they are trying to do some re-architecture. So I always felt that an architecture diagram was front and central to all of our efforts, and we were sort of like missing a good tool. There were a whole bunch of diagramming tools out there, but nothing specifically focused on cloud. So this was becoming a repeated issue where, you know, for every customer, they didn't have any tool through which they could articulate their architecture. So saw this repeated trend and said, let's just, you know, how difficult can it be? Let's just create a tool. And like that took me on a, you know, like a side tangent, and yeah, CloudSkew sort of grew out of it. So today, yeah, you know, some 42, 43,000 users. So people seem to be sort of liking the tool, and it's been going great so far.
Love it. Yeah, 43,000 is a huge landmark. And honestly, I love, you know, the CloudSkew primarily because it's intuitive, it's easy to use, and, you know, especially when you're, you know, designing architecture design diagrams in the cloud, it makes it super simple. So thank you for that. That's really cool.
Yeah, so the underlying principle was, you know, like, let's keep the UI as fuss-free as possible. You know, let's not clutter up the UI. You know, this is not a tool for generic diagrams. It's just cloud architecture. So let people find their icons. Let's make it easy to search for icons. Let people make their diagrams and get the hell out of there, right? Like,
right, exactly.
So the UI is pretty much very uncluttered. It has like a minimal number of screens, minimal number of functions. And I'm sure there are, you know, other architecture tools that, you know, allow you to do whiteboarding sessions or collaborative editing and all that. We don't have any of that yet, and we intend to keep it pretty simple for most purposes.
Got it. Awesome. So you mentioned, Mithun, you were, you know, in the early part of your career, you were working for Microsoft, and you were an electronics engineer, and you did work in different, you know, organizations or different teams within Microsoft, and then eventually to the Azure cloud. And then you decided to, you know, take the plunge and start something on your own. So when did you decide that, you know, you wanted to be an, you know, entrepreneur or start something on your own? Was it like a light bulb moment? Like one day you decided, you know what, that's it, I'm going to start something on my own. What is, or was it like a progressive planning?
Was,
and then?
It was sort of progressive. I mean, I always wanted to do it. And, you know, I, you know, Jeff Bezos sort of like talks about the whole regret minimization thing. And I sort of like, I guess it took that to heart a little too seriously. It's like, okay, I mean, the, you know, so for folks who are not familiar with what regret minimization framework is, it essentially means that, you know, if you want to do something, better go and do it, you know, on your deathbed, you don't want to be regretting not having done it, right? So, and I thought, you know, if I don't do this now, I'll, you know, just keep talking about doing it. I'm never going to pull the trigger. So just decided to take the plunge and sort of take a sink or swim approach.
I hear you. And I think I'm definitely sure it wasn't easy, right? Like you were in the peak of your career, you were in the cloud, you know, the technology at that point, I'm sure it was like in the booming phase, and deciding to do something on your own, it would have taken. Speaking about, like, you know, the regret framework, like, is there anything that you regret about, you know, leaving the Microsoft job and starting something on your own at this point of time? Or
yes and no. I mean, you do have a little bit of, you know, like regret in the sense, like, you know, I had a great set of coworkers, you know, like it was a great environment to be in, right? There's a great collaborative spirit. Challenging environment, and you know, being such a large company, if you get bored with something, you can always switch over to some other team and start working on something new. So, but now, you know, sort of like being now I'm on the other end of the spectrum. While I have, you know, gained some new strengths and skills by being on the other end of the spectrum, yeah, there are still things I miss. It's mainly around the office environment and, you know, working in large teams that I sort of miss. So today with CloudSkew, it is mostly, it's an indie SaaS platform, right? So it's mainly me who's developing it, and there are a bunch of freelancers and contractors whom I engage with on a as needed basis. Yeah, I definitely miss the whole aspect of, you know, like, you know, building a large scale software system. But yeah, I guess, like, you know, each has their own strengths.
Right. So. Absolutely. Yeah, and I didn't realize that this is more like an indie SaaS model wherein you have, you know, distributed employees working. Is this similar to, because I've read, you know, Sahil's version of his you know, work style with Gumroad. Is it similar in, you know, from the working model? Is that how you guys also set up?
See, the thing is, today, you know, you, for my company, Skewed Ventures, consulting is still our main line of business, right? And Cloud Skew is sort of like a side engagement, if you will. And, you know, that side engagement is growing in, you know, growing in revenue and stuff, but the bulk of our revenue still comes from consulting. So, so for consulting, you know, we have various clients. So we have to have, you know, take a very distributed approach. You know, the clients are in different time zones, and, you know, some clients engages full time, some clients engages on a retainer basis. So you have to take a sort of like a distributed and remote approach to team building. You know, having a central office with, you know, like 50 employees, that doesn't work anymore. So Cloud Skew is also modeled along the same lines. I'm not too familiar with, I know Sahil's Gumroad platform, but I'm not too familiar with the approach he's taken to team building. But my bets are on, you know, having a remote distributed team, mostly composed of freelancers who, you know, we engage with and on an as needed basis. And so far it has been working great for them. Now, if Cloud Skew, you know, with the upward trajectory, will we have to change things? We might have to. We might have to build a centralized team sometime, but we are not there yet.
Got it. And then it looks like, you know, going forward, everything is going towards the model that you described, right? Like the COVID, et cetera, I think.
Yeah. And COVID has been, like sort of like the thing that accelerated everything 10x, right? Like there's a saying, right? Where there are decades where nothing happened and there are weeks where a decade happened. And you know, exactly. COVID was like that forcing function for everyone. So.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. I work as a, you know, solution architect, and I've seen this in real time, like during the last 1 year, the digital transformation in like the customers that I work with has been significantly outpaced, you know, the previous years. So that's
So you know, like every single client of mine, the top request has been doing a lift and shift to the cloud. So they are on premises, they are running some Hyper-V or Citrix environment, and they want to move to Azure or AWS or anything of that sort. So that's you know, where these days I'm spending majority of my time doing, you know, infrastructure migration, migrating from infrastructure as a service to platform as a service on Azure, moving stuff from Nginx or IIS servers onto Azure App Service. So, I definitely see an uptick in those activities in the last 1 year.
Interesting. And I have a question. I mean, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you're primarily working in the cloud space, and we'll get to the, you know, the architecture design of Cloud Skew itself. And from what I understand, it's a completely cloud native solution built on Azure, right? And the consulting engagements that you're also doing is primarily lift and shift into the cloud technologies, right? And one of the challenges that, you know, almost all of us face is that the rapid pace at which technology, specifically the cloud technology, is changing, right? I know you're extremely active on social media, you contribute to the community, et cetera, but how do you keep up? Like, what's your game plan to, you know, sort of keep up with everything that's changing? Do you have a single place to go? Do you go to multiple resources? Is there like a particular time of the week that you take out to?
So I sort of believe in, you know, as an indie SaaS developer, you have to be a full stack developer, right? You have to be a jack of all trades. So now, if I compare and contrast this to my corporate career, right, where you could specialize on one specific technology, go super deep into it, those things I can't do as an indie developer, So I have to know a little bit of AngularJS, a little bit of Node.js, a little bit of ASP.NET Core, a little bit of, you know, it's like just a little bit of everything to stitch things together and make a product out of it. So high level, I can't, the limitation is I can't go super deep into any single technology. And that's the part where I actually engage with freelancers. Like if there is something that requires me to grow an expertise, I rather than grow that expertise, it's probably more time efficient for me to just hire a freelancer and get that work done. I have to take a very broad view of things. So I have to manage everything from the tech stack, you know, the front end, back end design, DevOps, all the way to sales, marketing, content creation. So it's like, you know, wearing multiple hats. So, and you also have to, you know, go with that beginner approach. Don't assume that you know everything. Just be ready to get your hands dirty in any technology that comes along. Just be curious about how things work. Like, for example, oh, how does React Native work? You know, I sort of like go search on the web on, you know, a few tutorials, some hands-on labs, and just get my hands dirty and then do it myself. So I may not become an expert at it anytime soon, but I'll know enough about it to incorporate that into my product. So going broad, you know, taking the full stack approach, I think serves me very well in that whole indie SaaS space.
Got it. And then you mentioned that, you know, you do the full stack approach, but also any new technology that comes in, you prefer, you know, trying it out yourself hands-on before you can actually, you know, either incorporate it into your application or even, you know, see if it's viable. Is that the approach that you take, like hands-on?
Yeah, I actually spend, you know, a good half an hour to an hour every day just, you know, what we call sharpening the saw. So just take some time to learn something new. See, the difference when you compare and contrast somebody like, you know, a role like software development to something like professional sports, the difference between, so professional athletes, they spend bulk majority of their time training, practicing, learning new techniques. And then once a week, they have game day where they actually apply those things, correct? While we are software professionals, we apply things 24/7, you know, 7 days a week, but we don't take the time to actually learn new things. Maybe we, you know, maybe take a day in a month or maybe a day in a week or a few hours every week to learn new stuff. So it's an inverted model when you compare it to professional athletes. And, you know, you can't show up for a 5-day test match without batting at the net. So I do spend a little bit of time batting at the nets every day just to you know, give an analogy, but yeah, new stuff, always the first thing I look for is hands-on lab, right? Beyond the hello world examples, like, you know, if I get like some sort of a walkthrough of how to do the you know, how to build it, how to test it, how to deploy it, how to release it, an end-to-end walkthrough, that is something that makes me super happy. I acknowledge that I may not get, you know, I may not grow expertise in that stack, but I will know enough about it to incorporate it into my workflow.
Got it. And yeah, I think that's really, really valuable what you said there, because I believe in that strongly as well. Like, you know, from it reminds me of what Cal Newport said at Deep Work is essentially you have some time for your deep work where you sort of sharpen the saw, and then it's the rest of it is not really, you know, work that's irrelevant. It's still relevant, but it's more of shallow work. You're implementing or you're using what you learned. But it's very important that we spend that time sharpening the saw.
I'm a great fan of that book, by the way, right? It's, you know, like if I were to get deserted on an island with like just 5 books, that would make my top 5, definitely.
What would be the other 4?
So there was this book called Never Split the Difference. So it's a book on negotiating. By this. So this was a FBI negotiator named Chris Voss. So he was not a ordinary negotiator. He was a hostage negotiator, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. he would negotiate with terrorists under high pressure situation with like very limited amount of time and arbitrary, unreasonable demand. So how does he create a win-win situation in those? So I have to put those skills to the test, when negotiating contracts with my clients. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that definitely goes in my top five as well. Other than that, it's a whole bunch of self-help books. Like I think some of Malcolm Gladwell's books will probably make it into my. So I'm a huge fan of Audible, by the way.
Oh, exactly.
Actually, I don't read physical books. I just every day I take about an hour to either listen to a podcast or listen to my Audible books. So,
So what would be your daily routine like, Mithun, like from an ideal, a day in the life of Mithun Shanbhag? Like, does it start off with, exercise? Do you read a book? How do you start and how does your day go?
Good question. And I'm actually very happy to answer this. So what I do is, I have something, and actually I borrowed this technique from listening to Tim Ferriss's blog. So mm-hmm. this is called like having your boot up sequence. So, when you wake up, there's a series of things that you do to boot yourself up. So workout is one of them. Exercise mm-hmm. is definitely one of them. Not checking email or social media first thing in the morning is definitely one of them, right? You want to keep your focus. I just go to my calendar. I organize my day. Sort of like run through what all stuff is there on my calendar, mentally prepare for them. Is there anything I need to do for it? So once I'm done with my workout, I just plan my day. And then there are, routine things like before my most productive hours are before noon. So I do have that deep working sessions, right? Like that, Pomodoro techniques or setting the timer for 26 mm-hmm. minutes or 52 minutes and just doing like deep focus sessions of work. So I actually get most of my productive work done before noon, and after that it's all downhill. It's all calls and meetings, and that's where my schedule goes away from me. So the most important thing for me, the thing with routines and habits is it compounds over time, right? Let's say you it's easier for a person who's already active, for that person to do a marathon is less of a stretch than from somebody who's starting from scratch. So one of the books that I was influenced by on this topic is everybody has heard of Dilbert, right? So so the author of Dilbert, Scott Adams, he talks about this thing called goals are for losers, systems are for winners. So so the thing is create systems which are predictable, repeatable, and simple. Have a consistent waking up time, have a consistent breakfast time, have a consistent dinner time, have a consistent workout time, have a consistent schedule for your deep work, have a consistent schedule for your meetings. So the more boring and predictable and consistent you make your habits, the easier it is to follow along, right? You take out the cognitive load. There is no thinking involved. You just do it on autopilot, and that's what I do. I just fill my calendar with like daily repeatable tasks, and things just get done. Like awesome. There's no thinking involved. Like, oh hey, it is 8:30 in the morning. What am I supposed to do? Hey, I'm supposed to eat breakfast. So just close it from there.
Yeah, and that's my all-time favorite books. That's definitely one of them. How to win
win
at everything and still feel big. I think that's got so much insight in that.
I agree. So that would be my that would also make my
the third book.
If I have to get deserted on an island.
We hope. I mean, nobody has to get deserted, but it's really good. I think that's it really makes a lot of sense, because I asked this question specifically to almost all of my guests is because when I initially started off, like I used to read the books about daily routines and you know, habits, but it was more an intellectual thing. I used to keep it in the head, but never really did it. But the more I speak to people, like, I realize, hey, there's a pattern to it. And I've been trying to implement it, not perfectly, of course, like, you know, the workout, the meditation, etc. And I think, like you said, it's a compounding effect. You don't see that change the first 1 month. You're like, hey, there's no difference at all. But eventually, it seriously starts to, you know, make a difference. Yeah. So that's...
And this just doesn't just apply for, you know, things on the calendar, like, you know, breakfast times or workout routines or, you know, sleep schedule. These habits, you know, also apply to something like your financial life, right? Like X percentage of your income should go towards savings every month. Mm-hmm. So you just put that on autopilot with something like a dollar cost averaging or a SIP investment for, and, you know, it just compounds over time. You just watch the thing grow. And it's complete on autopilot, right? You don't have to think, hey, do I invest in this stock? Do I sell this stock? Do I buy this stock? Exactly. Nothing. It's just, you're just letting it compound and grow.
Yeah. And that's another topic, which is also, you know, personal interest to me, personal finance. But I agree 100%. Like, you know, the more people try to, you know, be intelligent with respect to money, like buy low, sell high, etc. None of that seems to work. Like, I'm a huge fan of J.L. Collins and his works, but just, you know, leave it in autopilot and don't really mess with it.
You should, you know, so there's this community called Bogleheads.
I love the Bogleheads.
So, same here, you know, like card-carrying member of the Boglehead community.
Awesome. I mean, I see a lot of similarities. Like,
it's all, you know, it's all the JP Nagar, you know. It's in JP Nagar's water, man, I'm telling you.
Interesting. Now, usually what I ask, like, most of the guests is, what's the one, you know, cloud solution that you're really proud of? And I'm assuming in your case, it's going to be the CloudsQ app, or is there another solution that you have, which, you know, you're developed, which you're really proud about from
Cloud solution. To be honest with you, I sort of got into the cloud. So my majority of my career at work and at Microsoft was not around cloud, because cloud wasn't around at that time, right? So it was mainly operating systems and runtimes and the code editors. So got into the cloud game around, I would say, 2015 or 2016, in that time frame, like when I actually moved to the Azure organization. But ever since that, I've been like, you know, CloudsQ is my one public-facing SaaS application, but I do have a whole bunch of, small tools and services that we mainly use in our consulting projects. Say, for example, right, you know, somebody wants to do a assessment of their Kanban board. So we have a small tool / checklist wizard that sort of does that. So something for migration, like assessing your migration plans, have an internal tool that does that. So we use this only in our consulting engagements. We haven't, found the time or the need to sort of put this into a SaaS package and open it up for others. But, all of these tools are my children, if you will. It's just that CloudsQ happens to be the most public-facing.
Got it. Interesting. So you're saying you're using it mostly for, like, internal tools, but you're not really
I like, you know, like developing random things, that, you know, hopefully are useful to my customers. But generally, they are either very domain specific or, you know, very customer centric, right? It has been like customized very heavily for my clients' needs. So it's not something that, you know, I can generalize it and release it to the, you know, audience at large. So just have to, you know, keep it internal only. So say, for example, right, you're building something with a customer in the fintech segment. So we're building a solution that scans for compliance issues. So they are bound by a bunch of compliances and regulations around data sovereignty. So we do assess. We have a small tool that does an assessment of their cloud architecture and mm-hmm. sort of like dumps out a compliance report. Now this, because of NDA reasons, you know, this solution is very, this was built specifically for that client. It's not something that we can generalize and release to mm-hmm. others. So mm-hmm. because of contractual reasons, we can't. So,
got it.
So that's a sort of like pitfall of being in the consulting business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, yeah, that's really cool. Like the solutions, it's more like, you know, you have a lot of tools, you're creating different creative solutions, be it for consulting engagements or for the public facings.
Correct.
SaaS side. And for the listeners, I'm also going to post the link to the documentation of the page where you talk about the architecture of how CloudsQ is developed. And I think you also have a video where you walk through the architecture as well. So I'll post correct. That in the link description for the podcast. I mean, for somebody who's maybe on the edge, right? Like who's thinking of starting something on their own or, mm-hmm. Have an idea. Like what's your advice or what's your, maybe reality check? Let's say, hey, here's what you think it's going to be, but here's a reality check.
So it's a good question. So, first thing, make sure you have, enough savings in the bank to sort of, bankroll you until your product or service starts making some revenue, right? So mm-hmm. it might be 6 months, it might be a year, it might be more than that. So, and especially if you're planning to go the bootstrap way rather than, raise VC funding, mm-hmm. it's essential that you have savings that will sort of bankroll you until, you raise revenue on your own. So that's one. Second thing is don't do this alone. Try to do this with a team, right? So say, for example, my own case, right? I was pretty strong on the development side of things. I was terrible at the marketing, sales, content creation side of things. Mm-hmm. So when I ventured out and started my coding bootcamp, I created the platform, created the LMS system, all that great. But then selling to customers was a real challenge. And it took me a little bit more time than it should have to engage with the right set of customers. So eventually I had to delegate that to somebody else and partner up with them. So if you want to branch out on your own, make sure you have a good founding team. And by founding team, what I mean is multiple partners who sort of have skills that complement each other. So somebody who's probably good at development work, somebody who's probably good at the marketing function, somebody who's good at sales. So it needs all those things to sort of come together to run a business, right? Anybody can create a product if they need to, right? But creating mm-hmm. a product and creating a company and creating a business are completely different things. So that team approach is very critical. And, there's a saying that, if you want to travel fast, go alone. But if you want to travel far, go with others. So mm-hmm. that's the approach. So team is number two. Number three, I think very critical that you have some sort of, so there's this terminology called founder market fit. Now we've all heard about product market fit, but founder mm-hmm. market fit is sort of the ability of the founder, whoever is creating the product, for them to connect with their target audience, right? Do they have the right set of skills to be in that domain? So for example, somebody who's been working on, let's say, databases, and you put them on something that so person who's been working on databases may not necessarily be able to empathize with the gaming community or may not necessarily know how to connect with the gaming community. So a database developer is probably the wrong person to start a gaming community. So mm-hmm. at the very least, they need to sort of partner up with folks in the gaming community if they want to do some solution around gaming. So it's very, so that founder market fit is, A, are you the right person to build the solution, right? Do you have the necessary background and skills? some skills can be acquired over time very fast, right? You do some hands-on labs, right? But understanding the nuances, the nitty-gritties of the market, the pricing, pricing model, the supply-demand chain, this takes years and years of being in that domain. So this again comes back to the whole team thing, right? If you don't have the domain expertise, and if you don't have the ability to connect with the target audience in your domain, then you should partner up with someone who has. So interesting. Yeah, those two things, critical.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. All the points that you said, like, you know, have the savings in the, you know, the bank account, because at least to have some sort of cushion for the next couple of years until you see the product pick up.
Yeah.
Don't do it alone, and the founder market fit. I'm particularly interested in the founder market fit, right? Because when you said you want to be, this one thing that, you know, somebody believes that, hey, I think I'm the right person to start this. But there's also the community engagement aspect of it, which I think, you know, you're doing an excellent job in, like, the Twitter community engaging. Mm-hmm. But was that, like, after you took the leap, or what was the preparation while you were in a 9-to-5 to be ready for the next journey? What percentage of preparation did you do before, or was it, you know, completely started after you decided to take the plan? Did you have a plan and then execute it later, or did you also start taking?
I knew that I always wanted to do it. I didn't really formulate a plan until the last year or so. So for me, it was not just, you know, like switching from being in a full time corporate job to branching out on my own. It was also about switching countries as well. So. Mm-hmm. So it took a little bit of planning, and for family reasons, I did want to move back. I did plan out the last 1 year. I would say, was when I got really serious about it, started creating a whole bunch of checklists and just, meticulously executing these things to, you know, build up the groundwork. So when I transitioned, I had all the necessary, team in place, and all the the architecture, sort of the infrastructure in place for me to I wanted to hit the ground running as soon as I transitioned over. So slowly started building that on nights and weekends over the last 1 year.
Interesting, got it. Okay, so you did have like a year's headway.
Yeah
before you actually got it. Okay, cool. So Mithun, If people had to get in touch with you, or if they had to, you know, contact you, what's the best way that they can, you know, talk to you or about the product?
Oh, best way is Twitter. Try to be active on Twitter on most days. My handle is Mithun Shanbhag, Shanbhag. Okay. So that's, and if people want to shoot me an email, it's mithun@cloudsq.com. So always happy to help, folks with anything. Doesn't necessarily have to be about CloudsQ, can be anything about career, about routines. Happy to discuss anything. So awesome. You can reach me out. I have a blog as well, but I think the last time I updated was like a year ago, so and that is probably something I need to add in my routine as well, which is like writing frequently enough. The challenge with the writing blogs is most of my time does get spent into, writing some sort of tech documentation for my consulting clients. So after that, there's like very little energy left to, write up blogs. So, yeah. Sorry, awesome. I'm just, meandering from...
No, it's very nice. I had a great time talking with you. Thank you so much for taking out the time. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks. And once again, I'm a huge fan of your work. So I subscribe to that Azure Monk YouTube channel. So, and actually, I did learn about private link from your channel. So the Azure private link. So I was struggling with that concept. Like, how does this work? How do I isolate my, traffic to a specific VNet? And finally, I came across your video, and all those concepts got clarified for me. So thank you for Yeah, keep up the good work with the YouTube channel. I hope you keep creating those videos. So
yeah,
you
know, appreciate it. Glad you followed you. So I have the same curse as well. Like, you know, I want to create more content. There's like a list of episodes that I have to do it, but like, you know, trying to, there's something else which always takes precedence. But you know, I love the, you know, routine idea. Like, have this in the calendar. This is when I'm going to do stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. All righty.
Awesome.
All right, Anand, it was great talking to you. And, you know, I hope your listeners, you and your listeners, you know, got something useful out of this.
Absolutely. I mean, I personally found it very, very useful. Thank you so much for that.
All right. Thanks, Anand. See you later.
All right.